Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer with Anika Burgess, the author of the new book, Flashes of Brilliance. Highly recommended. If you take photographs with your iPhone, you're succeeding in an experiment that's been going on for almost 200 years, starting in Paris. Now we come to how the derring do of the early photographers turned into revelations that were capable of moving whole cultures, whole countries, and that we're still on the grip of that movement. I'm talking about poverty. Anika, wonderful story of Jacob Riis, a migrant who lives hardscrabble life in the poverty of Lower Manhattan. 5 points is how I imagine him coming to the city. And he becomes a newspaper man, and then all of a sudden, he has an idea of a camera. What does he do with the camera? And I believe it's wet collodion or dry collodion that he's using. Who is he?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, he was a newspaper man. He came from Denmark to America and managed to establish himself after some very hard years. And he began documenting in his writing the conditions of the tenements in Manhattan, which were, of course, incredibly grim, very dirty, full of disease. And he felt that the words that he was writing wasn't having enough of an impact of what he was really witnessing. And he was reading in the newspaper one day about something new, something called flash powder. And it was a brand new invention that enabled photographers to take photographs in at night in dark spaces underground. And so he began experimenting with that. And that is how he was able to go into the tenements with his camera, using flash powder to illuminate the interiors and what he saw, people packed into rooms and the grim conditions, and then show those to the public to make it very clear exactly how people lived. And of course, he translated that into a book that he wrote, a well-known book called How the Other Half Lives.
I ran into him once, I believe, an anecdote with Teddy Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, an early commissioner for the police in Manhattan before he became his climb to the national offices. And I think he spent time with Riis going out and taking photographs. If you've never seen them, they're to be considered because this is frozen in time what it means to live hard scrabble in Manhattan at the turn of the century. The rooms are not only dirty, they're packed. Human beings are in there without adequate. Some of them are wrapped in blankets because you immediately understand there's no heat. Riis is taking their photograph. Now, a detail here. Some people were superstitious about having their picture taken. Did Riis write about that? Did he talk about asking permission? Did anybody think about that at the time?
No. I mean, to my knowledge, there was no permission to be asked. In fact, there's a book written about this by Bonnie Jochelson, and she makes the note that, you know, he would have entered the room in the darkness. He wouldn't have been able to see very much until he flared his flashlight. So for the people in the photographs, they would not have consented, no. And this is a real issue to think about, I think, with the greater understanding that we have today. You know, they were already facing so much in their lives, and now there was an intruder in their tenements flaring a flashlight in a frying pan, actually, was his way to do it. And I guess from Riis's perspective, he was there to eliminate literally and figuratively the lives that they were experiencing.
Yes. And now he used dry collodion or wet collodion? I don't recall.
At that point, he would have been using dry collodion because it was the late 1880s. Yeah.
And he used a flash, magnesium flash. Did he have the pistol or was it a stand? How did he do it?
The pistol, you know, he actually knew the individual who developed the pistol. a man named, actually a dermatologist named Henry Piffard. And, you know, experiments around magnesium had been taking place for 20 years prior to this point, but it was difficult to figure out the best illumination, the best method to illuminate the magnesium, and it was expensive. And so by the time Rees started using it in the late 1880s, it had dropped in price and it was easier to obtain. It was still very dangerous, of course. And Piffard had developed a magnesium cartridge that you put into a regular pistol and fired it off to illuminate your scene. And he actually used that on his dermatology patients so he could take a picture of them in low light situations. To my knowledge, Rees did not use the pistol. He illuminated his magnesium or ignited his magnesium in a frying pan.
Also, you can take the poverty of Five Points of Manhattan and you can take the awe-inspiring Yosemite. Again, photographs are the way the public understands what needs to be done. Who first? How did they do this, hauling that equipment around? What, do they have teams of 50 people?
No, I mean, this is a remarkable story involving a man called Carlton Watkins, who was actually from New York and went to San Francisco and ultimately made his way to Yosemite with the idea that he wanted to take what were known as mammoth format photographs. And mammoth was around 20 inches by 16 inches-ish. And of course, he was using the wet collodion process, which, as we've talked about, required all of the chemicals to be on site with you. And when you have very large negatives, 20 by 16, you need a very large camera, you need very large developing trays, and you need a lot of chemicals. So Watkins went to Yosemite many times, but his first trip was in 1861. And yes, I believe he had two assistants with him on that trip. There's some information about his life, or quite a lot of information about his life is missing. But a later trip, he reportedly had 2,000 pounds of equipment with him, which he was taking over landscapes by mule, setting up on the spot with these enormous plates and this enormous camera, which reportedly weighed 75 pounds, to try to photograph this enormous and magnificent landscape.
Yes, you have one photograph in particular that's fetching because the foreground is quite clear, the shining light on the leaves and the river flowing with the detritus on the side, but the distance images are of huge mountains, but they're covered in what appears to be a mist. It's it's very much a movie set, not a photograph.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. That it is. It does have that that scope and that scale, I think, that you'd expect from a movie set. But it's interesting too because with Watkins, you know, it's hard to know exactly what gave him the idea to photograph this in mammoth format. There's a number of kind of theories as to that, but I'm sure that what he was not thinking about was the preservation of Yosemite. But of course, that is what his photographs helped lead to. You know, his images were seen by the governor of California, or the senator, sorry. And then shortly after that, that senator proposed legislation to protect Yosemite, which was signed by Lincoln in, I think, 1865.
The question of disseminating these photographs, they were reproduced. Were they capable of doing newspaper reproduction? I don't remember at this time. I think
no, not at this time. No. So his images were seen. They would have been displayed in galleries. So he sent them to people. He sent them to Olmsted, the individual who designed Central Park. He sent bundles. He would display them in galleries. They were displayed actually in New York, which is remarkable. They traveled across the country to be displayed in a gallery on Broadway in around 1862. So it was really a sort of a seeing them in person situation, because at this point it was really only photographs could be translated to engravings to be published in the newspapers, but full reproduction of photos didn't happen until around the time Jacob Rees was taking his pictures.
Philosophy, we must attend to the fact that early on, right away, the question was raised, is a photograph true? And the assertion was that it was true, although there are plenty of examples of manipulation. And it's still today, when I see something online, Anika, I doubt it right away, especially if it suits common sense. I go, what is this? And so they had that same story. The one that's most tragic is the picture of Mary Lincoln claiming that they can see Lincoln's ghost behind her.
Yes.
However, there were uses of the trickery of photography, and they learned early on that you can do a scene that you can reproduce forever. Was it considered resolved that whether photographs were true or false in the 19th century? Because your book goes up to the First War.
Yes. You know, and I think that is it was a hotly debated topic, especially in the 1850s and 1860s, which is when those artists that you just mentioned, a man called Ragelander and another man called Robinson, when they started to use photo manipulation to create scenes from their minds, imagine scenes, allegorical scenes. And there was a huge outcry and some controversy over them doing that, because there were many people that believed photography should only and can only be used to depict truth and fact, even though, you know, photography is not true in the sense that at that time it was in black and white. That does not mean it was true. Sometimes the lens could be distorting something and the perspective would look off. Nevertheless, it just grew out of this idea. And one theory is that it's because photography came from science, as you pointed out earlier, it came from chemistry and optics, that therefore it had to be truthful and it should only be truthful. But already there was pushback on that, even in those early days.
Who was Anna Atkins?
I mean, she is a really interesting figure in early photography. She was very well educated, and she started to experiment with something called cyanotypes, which was invented by Sir John Herschel, who was also very influential in early photography. And a cyanotype is a cameraless process. It basically is a way to reproduce an outline of an object on paper, and when you rinse it, it becomes this beautiful blue color. In fact, it was later used as blueprints for a long time. But Atkins had the idea in the early 1840s to use the cyanotype to create images of algae. She was a very keen botanist. And so she spent a very long time producing many, many, many books that had these prints, these cyanotype prints in them. And I trace her history in the chapter on color photography, because it is really interesting to consider and back to the conversation about truth in photography, the fact that color was painted onto images or tinted, hand-tinted images, and that work was often done by women.
The book is Flashes of Brilliance, The Genius of Early Photography and How It Transformed Art, Science, and History. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.